Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Welcome to part one of the Big Interview Q&A show for May. I'm Martin Gregg, and with me today are the host of the Big Interview, Graham Hunter, and our very special guest for these shows, La Liga TV's Pete Jensen. The show, as always, is a mix of questions from our socios who support this podcast at patreon.com/GrahamHunter and from our sponsors at Bet365. We are going to focus on La Liga for the part one of this Q&A, and it is one of the closest title races in recent memory. 6 points separating Atleti at the top to Sevilla in fourth, with Madrid and Barca level on points in second and third. The top four sides met at the weekend, with Barca and Atleti playing out a 0-0 draw and Madrid and Sevilla drawing 2-2. I'm going to start with you, Graham. In your ESPN column this week, you say, and I quote, "Anyone who failed to notice that there were two absolutely rock and roll moments at Camp Nou and the Estadio Alfredo Di Stefano, which deserve to remain iconic for many years, must be an emotionless, desensitised automaton who doesn't deserve to watch Spanish football." So let's address one of those moments with a socio question. Socio Ian Boddy, he says, "What's your view on refereeing in general and VAR in particular so far this season in La Liga?" So I think Ian's question takes us nicely into rock and roll moment number one, Madrid-Sevilla. Graham, talk us through the VAR moment to end all VAR moments in the Madrid-Sevilla game at the weekend.
Well, Ian's talking about a wider question, okay, referees and VARs, but you've drawn it directly to the weekend. And the reason I got so excited about it was that, in particular, of the two showpiece matches, the Madrid-Sevilla game was just blisteringly interesting. It was good. It was full of quality, even though they're exhausted, the two sides, particularly Madrid, and depleted. It's full of quality, full of interest, but it was dramatic. And my argument is that although we all sign up to football for life because we adore skill and goals and thrills and we pledge our allegiance to a team and we want just defence, you know, defensively magnificent tackles, we want drama. I think possibly even above anything else, drama will sustain you long after your admiration for technique has been overtaken by, we're technically good, why can't we win? Drama is the lifeblood of the game. And what happens is that early in the match, Benzema's goal is ruled out. It's ruled out so marginally that if VAR didn't exist, the goal would have stood, because they get it right, but Odriozola's toenail is offside and they show it gets ruled out. So the referee's got that in his head already, Martin, Ian as well. He's got it in his head that with Atleti and Barcelona having drawn the night before, and referees are human, they carry this into games. They know that on this night, if Madrid win, then it's not the title, but it's as good as. Because they can win the remainder of their games, that's quite clear. They would go equal top on points, but ahead of Atleti on a head-to-head, ahead of everybody else on a head-to-head. It's as close to a cup final as you can possibly get within a league. And having ruled one goal out, what happens is Sevilla go 1-0 up, and Asensio's on the pitch 70 seconds, and he makes it 1-1, and then this happens. That the ball is coming in from a corner. Acuña's cross is quite good. It's where Courtois can't come for it. Militao and Nacho are the two centre-backs. For anybody who didn't see the game, Pete knows this inside out. It's not Ramos and it's not Varane. So already, having lost a goal from the ball into the box, Martin, the defence are uptight. You can see that they're thinking, well, not again, not again. Militao goes up for a jump. They're Brazilian, raw, you know, interesting, but raw centre-half. And he does a sort of twirl as he goes up that's not natural. It's not like arms aren't pegged to his side because he's jumping. The assistants and the referee aren't crystal clear that it's a penalty. So under the current rules, you let play go so that the VAR people in their bunker, which are just across the city, are looking at it while play goes on. And this is a long-established concept. Everybody knows it's the case. There's a bit of pinball in the penalty area, and Sevilla are ragged. There's a caught-up pitch. Vinicius gets hold of it and does what does a little too irregularly for his own good. He plays a really, you know, perspicacious pass, sends Benzema away. Benzema runs two-thirds the length of the pitch, takes on Bono in the Civic. Should have passed, doesn't. Bono takes him down. He's trying for the ball, but he takes him down. Suddenly, all of Madridismo are shouting and screaming, we've got a penalty. They'll no doubt have been shouting, and the keeper's got to be sent off. Now, he wasn't, because double jeopardy means that in the penalty box, if you're the keeper or defender and you make an effort to try and get the ball but you commit a foul, it's penalty in yellow. But nonetheless, it looks like it's a penalty to Real Madrid. It would put them 2-1 up with not very long to go in a game that will make them more than champions elect. And as soon as that penalty foul is committed at that end, that Martinez Munuera stops the play. And he stops because he's got a voice in his ear, Gonzalez. And Gonzalez, after a few seconds, and you can see Martin Ian, you can see this Benidorm-born referee going, here we go. Whatever happens here, I'm in the absolute eye of the storm. Either I'm accused of bias towards Madrid, or the whole of Madridismo comes and craps on my head. And he's thinking and he's assessing. And they say, go and look. Now, they can't say to him, we order you to give a penalty to Seville. They can't. So all criticisms of Gonzalez, the VAR referee, need to go out the window. The referee's decision on the pitch is always final. He goes and takes a look, and it's absolutely clear that the bullshit that we've had to put up with in the Spanish media, broadcast and print since then, is completely misinformed. Irrespective of whether your paymaster at market or ass says, we've got to favour Florentino here, otherwise he's going to come chasing our arse. We've got to be pro-Madrid. The readers want pro-Madrid. Irrespective of all of that, the FIFA laws say, if you make your body unnaturally big and the ball comes off the lower part of your arm underneath the T-shirt line, it's a penalty. But still we get quoted, he didn't mean it, he couldn't see it. Some people talking about it wasn't unnatural. There's an editorial today from the ex-editor of Diario AS, and he says, Militao did nothing wrong. He did nothing against the spirit of the game. He didn't break any of the rules. It's just wrong. So the big thing, Martin, and this only partially answers Ian's question clearly, because the legitimate part of the debate is, it's true that not every referee is giving the same interpretation of handball, because the laws at the moment, although the handball penalty law is very, very short. You have to combine law 14 and law 12, and for my taste, it's really quite clear. So Martinez Munuera stands there with all the oral and visual information he needs. He takes a beat or two, and he says it's a penalty. And he was right. And all you can ask in this situation is, how does the TV frame it? Because we can't be at the game. And it was just theatrical. It was absolutely beautiful. You get one end incident, straight to the other end incident. A referee, I personified him as one of the most popular forms of drama, written or broadcast, is the courtroom drama. And it always ends with the pros and the cons, and the foreman of the jury, he or she stands up and goes, we've reached a verdict. Guilty, not guilty. maybe Florentino would have liked the Scottish law version of not proven. Nothing happened at all. But they don't have that in Spain. And he gives a penalty, and Rakitic, the ex-Barcelona player who set up the first goal for Sevilla, tucks it away nicely. And in the end, Cruz equalises. But no, those aren't the points. The point is that this man, with all his training, and I think it's 27 years as a ref because he began at age 11. He was built for this moment. We ask our footballers to be ready for their big moments. The referees are the same, and he got it right, and it was brilliantly dramatic. And my small summary before you hand to Pete is that, in my opinion, across decisions and then revisions through VAR in Spain, I think, percentage-wise, pound for pound, I think we get better quality of decisions than in England at the moment. I think we get more consistency, and I'm more often left saying, that's right, we have had Billy Smart circus moments with VAR. We have had times when the human factor, which will always interfere, has cocked it up. But broadly, Ian, my opinion is that the way in which VAR functions, the way in which they talk to the referees in about 80-85% of the cases is good enough for my taste and on an upward curve.
Well, one of the criticisms of VAR is that it's going to take all the drama out of football and slow everything down. And as Graham has just brilliantly illustrated, it's not doing that. Certainly not in moments as we saw on Saturday. One of the big complaints about the handball rule, of course, is that it keeps changing. And next season, that's not a penalty. And Graham's completely right. It's a stonewall penalty, and all of Madrid's complaints since have been a little bit pathetic, because as the rule stands at the moment, it's absolutely 100% a penalty. But next season, they're going to change it again, and they're going to make it that if your arms are in an unnatural position, but that is because of the way you're moving your body, that is the movement you're making, because you're jumping or because you're running or because you're falling or stretching, then it's not handball. So that's one of the problems that the referees have, and the referees are in the firing line, and the rules keep changing, and they're under so much pressure, and they have been under pressure this season with comments that have been made more by Koeman than Zidane, it should be said. Koeman's been crying for most of the season. Zidane, that was the first time, and you can see how the pressure's building in the title race, that we had that sight of him walking out onto the pitch at the end of the game and speaking to the referee. In terms of his questions about how it's working, I think one of the one thing that we all thought VAR would do would be to get rid of the absolute 100% mistakes. And there are still things that happen, and you think, how is it possible that that decision has not been corrected? And there was one at the weekend, Celta Vigo played against Villarreal, and there was a head clash in the clash of heads in the penalty area. Celta had a corner, Hugo Mayo went in for it, and he headbutted completely without intention Asenjo. And both players go down. It looks terrible, and you even think, is this going to end up with Asenjo, poor keeper, in a neck brace? And when Asenjo finally gets to his feet, the referee's given a penalty. So, you know, again, referees don't... There are times where the referee doesn't spot it, and it was David Midea Jimenez, and he hasn't seen it, or he's seen it and he thinks that Asenjo has punched Hugo Mayo in the head, and he doesn't realise it's a clash of heads. But then Pablo González Fuertes, who's the video-assisted referee, can see the replay 1,000 times. He can see that it's a clash of heads. It's not a penalty, and it just makes no sense that stays as a penalty and is not corrected. And another one very quickly comes to mind right at the end of last season. Hugo Duro stepped on the Real Sociedad Robin Lenormand's foot in the penalty area, and Lenormand, but it was given a penalty against him. Uradura was awarded a penalty. So there are things like this that are still happening, and it doesn't make any sense why, because the video assisted referee has got the replays and he's got the time to look at it and see that it's wrong. One of the things La Liga wants to do is it wants to stop having the match day referees being the video assisted referee. And it wants to bring in maybe retired refs. And that makes far more sense. And maybe you could have the VAR guys in a team with the referee, so that every single game that referee referees, he has the same guy in the VAR. They build up a relationship. They build up an understanding. And, you know, the number one thing we all want from VAR is that you don't get any more clear injustices. And it's still not quite wiping them out. So that could be... that could be a solution, but I agree with Graham that on the whole it gets it right, and it definitely got it right in the game at the weekend.
I love the way you phrased it, Peter, because I don't think there's a Masonic thing going on, but it's equally clear that some referees will just about think, I'm going to look after my guy on the pitch there, and I'm not going to turn up. Not all the time, but occasionally when we see the most hard to explain interaction between a pitch referee and VAR, sometimes you get the feeling, they're just looking after their guy. And if the referees, not all of them are friends, that's absolutely clear. But there might be cases, and we don't have open mics, and maybe open mics or the availability of re-listening later to the open channels, to channels that aren't fully open. These things might complement, but Pete suggested the very best thing, a detachment, just like, you know, between the lawmakers and the justiciary. I think if there's a degree of detachment and a degree of outside expertise brought in from ultra-reliable ex-players, because ex-players carry agendas of their own and it won't lead to perfection, but I think the balance Pete suggested there is a really good one.
And to take the stigma away as well from the match day referee getting it wrong, because, you know, there's this... When VAR first came in, you heard people saying, well, we don't want to take the authority away from the referee. Well, this is what it is. It is taking the authority away from the referee, but it's with justification, because the game is now played at a million miles an hour. It's impossible for them to see everything. It doesn't matter that David Miguel Jimenez didn't see at the weekend that Hugo Mayer is a clash of heads with Asenjo. Okay, no problem. The VAR referee's seen it. He's had a quick look at the replay. He only has to see the replay once. It's obvious, and he rules out the penalty. So
yeah, couldn't agree more.
Okay, let's talk about rock and roll moment number two from the weekend. Oblak v Messi in a 0-0 draw in the Camp Nou. This was an extraordinary save from Atleti keeper to deny Messi. Pete, you were actually at the game. What did you make of it?
Well, Oblak's going to win the Pichichi, I always get those two mixed up. He's going to win the Famora probably, although his Courtois is just a couple of goals behind him. And he's had another incredible season. I mean, at the start of the season, I think we were putting Atletico's defensive record, because they had a very good defensive record at the first half of the season. We were putting it down to the defence, but I don't think it was a defence. I think a lot of the time it was Oblak. And he's made so many big, big saves. I mean, you think about the penalty a couple of weeks back as well. I think it was against Elche, wasn't it? So he's been massive again. I thought it was a 9 out of 10 for Simeone, and probably a 4 out of 10 for Koeman. And Messi was the one bright light for Barcelona. And, you know, Barcelona's running is probably easier than Atletico's and Real Madrid's, but if they don't start believing that they are Football Club Barcelona and stop worrying about what the opposition are going to do. I mean, I've had a quick look at the papers this morning, and going into the game against Levante, it's, well, should we be, you know, we've got to be worried about De Frutos and Morales on the counter-attack. I mean, for heaven's sake, Barcelona scored 80 goals this season. Levante have scored 40. You've got to go into that game and just win it, win their last four games. And I think the other two will slip up, because I think it's been that kind of season. But they just seem to have lost belief in who they are. And at the weekend, it showed perfectly. You got Busquets going off injured during the game, and the obvious choice is bring Dembélé on, start playing 4-3. The title's at stake, and he brings Elise on. So it was very disappointing from Barcelona, but they still would have won the game had it not been for that Oblak save.
And I pick up what Pete says there, that it wasn't what you asked, but we've seen enough evidence over the last few weeks to know that, I hope this isn't a cheap metaphor, but when you're building a house, you get an architect and a foundation specialist to do your foundations. And Koeman has been that. And I'm wary of being hypocritical, because often I'll be defensive about the lack of time managers are given to, not just to implement their plans, but to have a couple of transfer markets, to reshape a squad. All of us were alive and in some cases working in the media when you know, the greatest of them all, Ferguson, took nearly five years to win a trophy at Manchester United, and then a couple more years to win the title, and then Chris Bang-Wallop. And not every manager who doesn't get time is going to do that, but you can guarantee that you don't get the best out of a manager if you don't give him reasonable time. But avoiding the charge, I hope, of hypocrisy in Koeman's case, I think we've seen enough to know that the foundations are well built and he's done really valuable things. But consistently, if you match what we've seen over the crucial weeks back to even his spells at Ajax and Benfica and Southampton, and potentially, I mean, I'm not so sure about this comparison with the national team, Koeman has flaws, and I think they become glaringly apparent. And the way in which he set the foundations actually makes it triple important that they are built upon in the right way. I think he's shown sufficient flaws of match reading, squad reading, tactics reading, that were I Laporta, I wouldn't continue with him. And not even if somehow he flukes the league. And that would be, you know, to win the double in the hypothetical case that it would lift La Liga and be removed, you know, people would jump on that and with big hobnailed boots, and I would understand it. But analytically, we've seen his flaws sufficiently that he shouldn't carry on, that somebody else should build. And one of the things that I think will make that clearer to Laporta, it was out of Koeman's hands, because the save you talked about, Martin, what I loved best of all was that there had been chances in the game. It wasn't an arid match. Pete, from having been in the Camp Nou Tribune with that beautiful aerial view you've got, will tell you that there was a lot of cleverness. There were serious goal chances, predominant for Atleti. Atleti probably deserved to sneak it, I think. Had Suarez been on... Had he been sharp? He's not sharp yet. Had he been sharp, probably he'd have turned it. Probably they'd have won it. But there comes this moment just before, about 5 minutes before half-time, when Messi picks the ball up just nearly in the same patch of grass as that 2015 Athletic Club goal in the cup final. And instead of going down the line and then cutting in as he did then, he takes on... I mean, I forget that the list of players he beats includes Saul, Koke, Felipe, Savic, Llorente, and I think one other. And it's magical from him. And he unleashes this shot, and at first glance, I think it goes by. That's how good a save it was, how tiny a touch Oblak gets on it. And what elevates the moment, I think, into the dramatic rock and roll sphere that you were talking about, Martin, in your question, is that Oblak had talked a couple of months earlier about Messi takes everything out of your control. Messi's skills are that you don't know when he's going to shoot. You don't know where he's going to shoot to. You're at 100% and you're confident. And if he's fully sharp, he does what he wants. And it means that 9 times out of 10, you can't prevent him doing what he wants to do. And that isn't a defeatist phrase. Oblak's had to suffer exactly that. There was one that... in late November, a couple of seasons ago, at the Metropolitano, not last season, season before, pardon me, where Atleti were much better. It was still 0-0. Barca had been cack. And it was De Jong's first season. He runs two-thirds of the length of the pitch, passes it to Messi on the right. Messi runs in across the penalty area, going from right to left, leaves it to Suarez, who just... barely touches it, set Messi up as he goes, as he moves onwards again. You could almost call it a 1-2, but it'd be a 1-1.5, really. And Messi just fucking erupts one off his left foot from an angle whereby you shouldn't be able to score. Oblak's at full length and he can't get to it. And it's the one where everybody in Atleti, before they lament their fate, they just shake their heads. And Simeone is about to erupt in anger, and he just stops and he checks himself and he goes, "Ah, bollocks, there's nothing you can do with that." And Simeone applauds. You're like, Man bites a fucking pack of dogs, not just a dog, to see Simeone applauding the opposition. And that's what Oblak was talking about, yet he defies his own words. It wasn't a Messi... Messi probably could have done nothing better at that game that Pete was at. And the save is extraordinary. I'm certain it solidifies Atleti's belief that this is our day. They only get the draw, not the win. But it was just shimmering for me. It stands out, and it'll stand out in my memory for years and years and years to come.
Okay, it's time for a break. We'll be back in a moment with a couple more questions to complete part one of this month's Q&A.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, and we're back with a couple of questions on Atleti. Socio Robert Ryan, what are your predictions for La Liga title with 3 games to go? Graham wrote a super article about Luis Suarez at the start of the season, and I took Atleti then at 9-1. Socio Jake Garlick says, if Atletico managed to just about go over the line, will it paper over the cracks that have shown in the second half of the season and mean that they don't make the changes they probably need? I'm going to go Jensen Madrid first.
Top of the league. 3 games to go. It's in their hands, and it'll be remarkable if they can do it. And I think they can do it. I just hope that I've just got visions of them being 1-0 up against Osasuna, and Simeone, you know, sending on a couple of centre halves, and Budimir bundling the ball in on 89 minutes for the equaliser, and that losing in the league. I think some of the criticism of him has been fair. They've looked nervous when they've taken the lead. He tends to err on the side of caution too much with his changes, but I also feel there's the issue of João Felix, which doesn't get talked about enough. João Felix is kind of considered to be the victim in that relationship with Diego Simeone. Poor guy, turns up still so young, coach doesn't put his arm around him, coach doesn't trust him. The number of times in the second half of the season when João Felix has come on and has had zero impact in games, it happened again at the weekend. There's a late counter-attack for Atletico Madrid. It's Messi that gives the ball away. It runs to João Felix. João Felix needs to start the move lightning quick. He doesn't do it. He's too slow, pedestrian. And in the end, I think it's actually Messi who gets back and snuffs out what ends up being a pretty poor counter-attack. Someone's got to go at the end of the season, either João Felix or Diego Simeone. Ask the Atletico Madrid supporters, and I think 85-90% of them would say João Felix. What they do, whether they send him back to Portugal to have a year on loan where he can be brilliant and his price can go right back up and create interest, or whether there is someone, there is a club who would take him now even without that loan season away where he gets his confidence back. Is it feasible, or is it pie in the sky to suggest Griezmann going back to Atleti and João Felix ending up at Barcelona? Probably. But I think there are times when Simeone is criticised for making negative changes, and actually one of his first changes has been to bring on João Felix, and João Felix makes zero impact from the bench. He's the man for Atletico Madrid, Diego Simeone, but you've got to sign him Diego Simeone players. And João Felix is not a Diego Simeone player, and they spent, what was it, 127 million euros on signing him. So, I mean, I'd quite like to have gone second, to be honest, because I want to hit back at all Graham's...
Martin, can you see how... this is just to pick up on your University Challenge metaphor there. This is how Pete got to Cambridge and stuck it to Oxford.
Because
he's done
a little...
He's done what
Joe
Felix is supposed to do. A little flick of the hips, and he's moved into a pocket of space. But it's the wrong pocket of space. In the first... Roberto... you're asking who's going to get over the line. Now that you've got your money lodged with the bookmakers, whatever we say doesn't matter two figs. And I think that Madrid are so exhausted that their timetable, which includes Granada, which I think they'll take, they could drop points at Athletic. Villarreal, even though they're going to be hoarding players for Dansk, because I'm certain that comes after the end of the league. When I say certain, I mean I think. And I think Barcelona now, the head-to-head thing is going to ruin them. So yeah, I think Atleti win the title. Guaranteed, Roberto? No. And as far as Jake's papering over the cracks... I think the cracks are bigger than the way in which the João Felix element has made Atleti and Simeone look as if they're a little bit disjointed. Where the cracks and where the disjointed thing comes in is that over several seasons now, we've seen Simeone change, and everybody's allowed to develop and or decay over the years. And I thoroughly don't believe that a manager or a player being at a club for a long time is automatically a negative and will lead to dropping of standards. That's not true. But it depending on the person, it can be the case. And I've seen a Wengerization of Simeone, whereby whether it's conscious, whether it's subconscious, the fact that he's paid over 20 million euros a season, the fact that he's chauffeur driven around Madrid in a Rolls Royce, the fact that his personal circumstances have changed from the hungry, lonely bachelor to the happily married man with a little kid. We've watched a guy who's gone from, I mean, he was literally an SAS commander when he arrived. It was come with me, he who dares wins, we're at war, we're a band of brothers, we've got people to hate. And the tactical acuity was partially from his now departed assistant, but Simeone's capacity to inspire man to man, which is now in the modern game, not the number one skill, but it's pretty fucking close to the number one skill, because players are tactically acute, there are assistants galore. A manager ultimately will take responsibility for strategy and tactics, but if you don't have your people on board, the multi-millionaires who can get you the sack, the guys who are like, well, if I have half a season off, nobody's going to notice it. Nobody did it. Madrid, when Cruz had two-thirds of a season off and he got a new contract and suddenly began playing brilliantly again. That just happens. And Simeone had that, and he's now got it to a lesser extent. And the flaws that we're seeing this season, whereby his appreciation of how to play, both the Chelsea ties, probably at least the second of the two Levante ties, matches that cost him so badly. The horrendous nature of the Madrid derby, the first one, the way in which he couldn't see that Suarez was out on his knees after a brilliant Atleti performance. And for my money, possibly Atleti's best performance of the season was in the 1-1 draw against Madrid the second time around, where they were extraordinary and they played like champions and they should have won. And Suarez, being knackered, has been kept on because Simeone correctly thinks of him differently. But good, top, sharp managers at the elite level go, my guy's finished. My guy's knackered. We change there. We change, we get them belly on, we close, we stretch, we press. There's about 6 minutes. And Suarez makes a run, gives the ball away. Atleti are set up for 2-0. He just gives the ball away out of tiredness. Madrid go up the pitch and score. That was the game whereby Atleti, being shoo-in wander home favourites for the title, went away. And Benzema, the play between Casemiro and Benzema for the goal was absolutely brilliant. And all I'm saying is that Simeone should have read it better. I'm being ultra critical, but Jake, in my opinion, you can reservice the bull with lots of mares, lots of cows that he likes to fraternise with next season and the season afterwards. And you're still going to get a guy who thinks that garnering huge sums of money by being there or thereabouts in the Champions League is now what his job is about more than winning. He's lost an edge, and you can see it in pre-match assessments. You can see in intra-match changes and ideas. You can see it in Felipe having the bollocks to... Felipe had an atrocious middle of the season, error strewn, and he comes out and says the manager doesn't explain the system properly. He's not very communicative. I don't feel terrifically happy with the way this things are going. And a player, that doesn't mean you take the player's side and you say Simeone's in the wrong because one player. What that indicates is that there's a player willing to speak out about supporting the evidence of our own eyes. And in the old days, no player would have done that ever. So, and also there's one last thing, Jake. There's a crack in the man referred only to as Professor Ortega. Atleti are running on gas and air, and at the end of the season have been doing that now for two or three seasons, to the extent that 2 seasons ago Simeone came out in midwinter and said there's something about our fitness that just ain't right. And I think that whatever it is, whether Ortega is running his players into the ground, whether his methods are just now being found a little bit stale by the players because of repetition. I can't say I've got my finger on it. But Atleti is a club which was poised to win this, should have gone far further in the Champions League, and is underperforming. And it's the several season in a row, probably since the Europa League victory against Marseille and Lyon. So I have trouble with Simeone. I think he is a problem. And either he reboots and restarts, or we won't see him being moved on. He's just a renewed contract. My criticisms are probably, you know, in space nobody can hear you scream, but I'm not impressed, Jake.
Pete, I saw you pick up your pen a couple of minutes ago when Graham used the word Wengerisation, and you've been scribbling away since then. So
that was a good spot. Wengerisation is a brilliant word, isn't it? And also you mentioned fraternise, which for many years was the Pompey fanzine.
Boo, Atkinson Stanley, boo, who are they?
I don't agree with the idea that they've underachieved. I think he's up against Barcelona Madrid. He's got a centre forward who Barcelona deemed surplus because he was a little bit too old, a little bit too slow. He's got a player who I've already talked about is 127 million euros of potential and may well be very good in 3 or 4 years' time, but right now he's just not up to it. He's got defenders who wouldn't get in Barcelona or Real Madrid side, players like Felipe, who will probably be moving on at the end of the season after being reminded of his comments. I think they do need to make changes. I think there are players like Saul who have been at the club too long and would benefit from pastures new. He can't have been too happy about being brought on and then taken off at the weekend, but in some ways it was justified. I think they were beaten by Chelsea, but Chelsea are one of the best, or the second best side in Europe at the moment, as would probably be proved in the Champions League final. There is a problem with youth. I see lots of young players coming through at Real Madrid and looking like they're going to be the future of the club. And I see the same at Barcelona. I don't see that at Atletico Madrid. And I'm not sure why that is. And I'm not sure if you can pin that in some way on Simeone and the way he runs the club. But I still think if they win it, and I think they probably will just, I think it's an incredible achievement. And things need to change. I don't know what the effect Nelson Vivas has had there. He's obviously... is coming. Is it his first season, Graham, this season? It is, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
So whether he, what kind of effect he's had and how that will develop going forward. And El Profi for so long was the man who made them what they were, and now he seems to be the reason why they have so many injuries. So that obviously is another situation that needs sorting out. They're going to have to be changes in the summer. I just don't see that Simeone is the right change. I still think he's the right man for the job, and I still think it'd be an incredible achievement if... And I think they will win the league.
Okay, I want to finish with a couple of questions on Sevilla, but I might, on the subject of iconic managers, I might squeeze in one from Shona McGovern on Zidane, who says, "Hi Graham and Pete, do you think Zidane will be in charge of Real Madrid next season if they fail to win La Liga? I know it's crazy to question a manager who has such a fantastic record, but this is Real Madrid we are talking about. As a Real Madrid fan, I'm on the fence about this one."
Hi, Shona. I don't think it's got anything to do with whether or not he wins the league, to be honest, because I think it's down to him. And I think he's leaning towards, "I've had enough of this, take two." As he already said it once, hasn't he, Graham? So I think may well be the second time of... Back to you.
Well, we work, Shona, as you know, if you've listened in, Pete and I and anybody that we trust in our game, Martin too and Neil, we work partly on information when we talk to people that we trust, but we have to also be interpreters of body language. And when you get Zidane using the phrase blah, blah, blah twice in a press conference, he's off. He's off. Whether or not they win the title, Zidane has been giving off signs of, "I'm not massively enjoying the parts of this job that are ancillary." I think he still takes huge delight out of being Madrid manager, out of the training ground, out of the majority of people he works with. But in an era whereby, I mean, listen, it's not enough to renounce a 15 million euro salary and leave the club you adore. But Shona, you want to listen to the bullshit that he gets asked every week. I mean, if you think about pre and post, about six times every week in a three-game week, he's asked the most torturous, repetitive shit. And I think he feels with very little appreciation from outside the club, in my opinion. And while, again, that's not a reason on its own to leave, I think it's corrosive. I think it takes away your satisfaction about, well, do I need to be here after all these victories? There are, in Zidane's words, I'm still relatively young, wholly vital. There are other things to do, and I can knock on the door and come back more or less whenever I want. I think Pete's sort of weather detection there, I would concur with that. It suggests that when he makes the decision, one, it'll be his decision. If they lose the league, he won't be sacked. I believe it's as simple as that. Win or lose the league, I think he's considering that if Deschamps were to be absolutely crystal clear, and I think Deschamps has guided us so far rather than absolutely announced outright that he's leaving France. I think that a few years working three-quarters time, two-thirds time as an international manager with a squad that's capable of potentially winning one or other of the tournaments, I personally think that appeals to Zidane. If he goes, and like Pete, I veer to the side that I think he wants to go. No guarantees. I'll miss him a lot. I enjoy his attitude to football. I think if you could strip 3 or 4 years off 3 or 4 of those players at Real Madrid, he'd continue winning in a pretty steamroller manner. And the squad's coming to a point where it's needing a good bit of gardening. I'm not certain that Zidane is necessarily the man to... I think he's the man to plan that. I think he's a brilliant spotter of talent. Some of the key footballers they've got right now, Shona, came because he was director of football. But to be the guy who's denied the chance to reseed the garden because Florentino thinks he's the director of football, and to be the coach who inherits what comes next, I'm not certain that's tickling him. So I think on balance, about 60-40, I think he chooses to leave. And again, about 60-40, I think there's a decent chance that by August he's maybe, or July or August, he's maybe the France coach. We'll see, maybe not. If he stays, all I'll tell you is that I'll be really pleased. I really enjoy watching him, listening to him. And in many of the things he says and does, I actually quite admire him.
Okay, let's finish up with a couple of questions on Sevilla. First up is Chris Hennigan, our socio, who says, "Hi Graham and Pete, be fascinated to know your take on Sevilla's league form this season and their almost but not quite title challenge. And is it fair to say that as good as Papu Gomez is and the qualities of Luke de Jong, they've ultimately fallen short due to the absence of a true individual goal-scoring threat in the final third?" And I'll just add on to that Bet365's question, "Do you think Sevilla will be La Liga title contenders over the next few years, or is this season just a one-off?"
I think that's being a little bit harsh on En-Nesyri. What is he 23 years old, En-Nesyri? He's had a fantastic season. He's shown this season that he's adding new things to his game. He's scored some goals this season that Luke de Jong would have been proud of, towering headers. We weren't seeing that from him last season. He was disappointing against Madrid. I thought just going slightly off question, Lopetegui was criticised for being negative against Real Madrid in the second half, but I thought he brought on En-Nesyri, and it was En-Nesyri who then didn't provide what Lopetegui was looking for him, which was, you know, the runs in behind, holding the ball up a little bit. But I think he's been excellent, En-Nesyri, 23 goals, 17 in the league. Papu Gomez was an interesting signing. I think they've made it work more than a lot of people thought that it would work, because you wondered how Lopetegui was going to fit him into the side, but he has done that. Luke de Jong, not a great season for him.
Well, Pete, let me butt in on something that I think you'll be able to pick up on. I agree with Christopher, and I'm not that far off your verdict, because En-Nesyri has... In fact, I've asked Monchi about, and you know Monchi well as well, he's got this... What the hell does he call it? His system includes a sort of a 70-30 ratio, Monchi, the director of football. And some players he wants to be 30-70 and some 70-30. So he buys some players, like Papu, who 70% of the impact that they're going to have needs to be instant, and 30% is what comes when they fit in. Some players, like En-Nesyri, it's a 30-70, and he admits that, you know, we're buying not just outright potential, but somebody who we cannot expect to hit the ground running. And En-Nesyri, ballpark, has been signed as a 30-70 and has performed as a 70-30. But This is why I butted in, Pete. I think that's all they've lacked to win the title, Chris. I agree with you that if a guy you know really well, let's say Suarez had been signed by Sevilla and he'd been playing all season at or around the level, he'd same amount of minutes, same amount of appearances as for Atleti, and particularly with the way that Sevilla play and how high up the pitch they like to press and where they win the ball and how quick the transitions are and how rarely, I know Nasiri runs in behind, but Luke de Jong doesn't, how rarely they're putting the ball long for a player to run onto, Nasiri can, but Sevilla would have won the title with Suarez. I personally think it's that simple. And there are other areas, Chris, that have surprised me. It's been... I think, for example, Bono supplanting Vaclik has shocked me, because even though Bono won in the Europa League, Vaclik was clearly the superior player last season until injury. Joe Jordan has been a revelation for me. Acuna, I'm still not a huge fan of, but he's punched above the weight I expected of him. I think to have Fernando at that age being as decisive again this season, again, as Chris has edged above my expectations for him. Navas, although he had a really difficult first part of the season, at that age to perform like this. I think there have been a puño of players who have given an 8 out of 10 season compared to the 6.5 I expected them to give, and that's why they're so close to winning the title. They'd have been such a romantic bet, but it's not romanticism that makes me agree with your question. And if they'd had a Luis Suarez or even an informed Ben Yedder, I think they'd have won the title. And Bet365's question, Pete, was, are they likely to continue to be title contenders? And I think the absolute crystal clear answer is they retain options to win a title, the title, over the next couple of seasons. And there are two ways to break that down. Firstly, Monchi, when he signed Lopetegui, told a colleague of... I mean, Pete's an invincible. I'm much more invincible, but Lauren is an invincible. He works with us on La Liga television. And when Monchi signed Lopetegui, he said... He told Lauren, who's a Sevilla daft footballer, we're building a squad to win everything. It's Monchi's intention to win the Champions League, to win the title. Now, whether they achieve that or not, I love the fact that he's pegged out his expectations. And even though they'll need to sell, and probably sell big, the fact is that he has proven that he can bring in, sell one and bring in three or four, at costs whereby their delivery far exceeds the outlay financially, far exceeds most people's expectations. Monchi is not without the occasional failure, but he's made of industrial rubber about how quickly he bounces back, because he's got a vast database of A, B and C players, C discarded, B maybe, A, and across areas and clubs whereby other people haven't seen. That, for example, Gustavo Poyet, Chris, Bet365 and Chris and Pete Mann and Chicharita. Gus Poyet, before he went to coach in Universidad Católica, was a colleague of ours on La Liga Television. And when Koundé signed for Sevilla, I remember being on, I think with you, Pete, on a Wednesday evening debate show where Gus said, look at this Koundé kid, he's a bit mad, he runs forward too much, but he can really play, he's a bit of a Mustang. But I saw something in him, I think, and Gus was pretty positive. Monchi, who hadn't coached him, had gone and said, this guy is absolute ginger, we need to have him, we need to sign him. Instantly he arrived, he changed Sevilla's win ratio. Across the couple of seasons that he's been there, there might have been a game or two every 8 months where you say, okay, kid looks a bit tired, or wow, the fact that he's not a towering centre-half was exposed there, but it's extremely rare. And when he's on form, he's a force of nature. And he's extremely young, still developing. And that's my way of saying to Bet365 for their question that we will see players like Koundé or Joe Jordan that others have thought, should we maybe, don't know, coming in a clutch of probably five or six this summer. And they won't be aimed at status quo, keeping Sevilla where they are. They will be aimed at winning the title and winning the Champions League. And I would think that the corresponding information, Martin, is that Barcelona and Madrid have learned things this season, but their debt isn't going to disappear. They're going to have difficulty reinforcing to the degree that they want to. And that means they're not suddenly going to disappear out of sight from Sevilla. And Sevilla's record against the top clubs this season is better than it was last season, when I think out of 18 points, I think Lopetegui took two. I think a couple of draws. Maybe no, so three draws. He got a double draw, maybe drew with Atleti twice and got a point on Barcelona last season. This season, the performance and the point ratio has gone up a little bit. I think that speaks of psychology and confidence. So without saying Sevilla are next season's champions, yeah, I categorically say that Sevilla are going to be in the race to win the title over the next two, three seasons.
And that partnership between Monchi and Lopetegui is definitely a positive one. I mean, I'm not going to say that, you know, they would necessarily be best buddies off the pitch, and you can imagine them having a meeting at the Pichuan, and you know, Monchi sat by the window blowing smoke out the window, and Lopetegui marching up and down, and Monchi saying, "Will you please sit down, calm down for a minute, Lopetegui?" But there seems to be an acceptance from Lopetegui that Monchi is brilliant at his job, and that he will take on board what's brought to him. There seems to be an acceptance from Monchi that he'll take input from Lopetegui. Some of the players that have been brought to the club since Lopetegui arrived have clearly been Lopetegui players, despite the fact that Monchi takes such control over who comes in. While those two stay together, I agree with Graham that I think Sevilla are title candidates going forward for the next two or three seasons.
Okay, that's it for this month's Q&A, or the first part of this month's Q&A. We'll be back tomorrow with more from Pete and Graham. Thanks to the socios who sent questions in, and thanks to you for listening. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.